Hello and welcome back, one and all, to another week at the Damage Report under lockdown. And it being Monday, we are lucky enough to once again be graced with the presence of Francesca Fiorentini. How's it going, Francesca?
Hello, happy Monday. It feels the same every day.
Yeah, some days I don't do the show, like 2 out of 7 of them. But other than that, yeah, it's all pretty much the same thing. How's everybody doing out there? You're surviving. I saw one of the first messages in the chat was, we made it to Monday. Yeah, we did. It was some weekend. Really fast, before we launch into everything, I want to let you know, behind the scenes, one of the weirdest things about doing all this independently is that every day you run up against weird tech things that you don't understand. Like occasionally, my camera, the feed, has little green lines across it. Not on the camera, but just when it gets here. And if I turn it off and turn it back on, it fixes it. And I have no idea why that would fix it, but it does. And normally when I go to start the stream, it starts this progress bar of different steps, kind of like how you can track your pizza from Domino's when you order it. And it doesn't do that anymore. I don't know why. I didn't change anything.
Now but I it just want a doesn't pizza. Anymore.
I do want a pizza. I do.
But anyway. Every Monday morning, everyone should get a pizza.
A breakfast pizza or just, you know, sausage? Dude,
I've never thought of breakfast pizza ever.
It's a thing.
Now I really want one.
There's a place nearby where I live that does a brunch pizza with like eggs on it or something. I don't know. It's weird. Anyway, thank you for being here. You've got a new episode of News Broke, right?
Yeah,
News Broke.
That's okay. that's what they call it in Scotland. Yes, new episode of News Broke about whether progressives can actually pull Joe Biden to the left and how we pretty much can't afford not to in November. Getting a lot of hate, getting a lot of love. It's a very nuanced piece, so it's not meant for Twitter. or the internet at all. But yeah, watch that.
Yeah. You are a very smart person. And if you wanted to, you could put out content that got you no hate all the time. And that would suck. It would absolutely suck. It's doable if that's what you want.
My followers would go way up if I just told them what they wanted to hear all the time. Yeah, isn't that funny?
It's weird. And they would say that you have integrity and that you're being very, very brave. So you really get everything. You've chosen the dark road.
Sit here with arms crossed, like, nuh-uh, I'm beyond Twitter for the next 12 years in my home. Oh, quarantine's over? Dude, my followers would boop, 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 boop.
That would be a fun experiment. Okay, everybody who's here, thank you so much. There's already a bunch of you. Please hit the like button if you haven't already to send the stream to more people so that they know what we're talking about, which is we're going to be talking about Nova Scotia, which is obviously devastating. And then updates on the coronavirus, how many lives have been saved thanks to the early actions of the Trump administration. That estimate is changing by the minute. It's getting pretty high. The lockdown protests, we're going to talk about that. And also, Chuck Schumer, senator, for now, maybe not for long. We're going to talk about that too. And also, I did not get to some of the super chats on Friday, and I felt really bad about that because we went way over thanks to the top 10 list that Brett and I were doing. So I will be trying to catch up a little bit on that. But if you're sending in new ones, we're going to get to those too. So thank you very much for supporting the show. With that, why don't we start off on a unfortunately somber note. Over the weekend, Nova Scotia was the site of what is being called the worst gun mass shooting massacre, whatever you want to call it, in Canada, in effectively recorded history. As of right now, when we're filming this, at least 18 people are dead. But because of the nature of the set of shootings, it is possible that more victims could be found at some point. I want to catch up on the basic details of this. A confrontation with the Royal Canadian Mounted Police began after a manhunt for a fleeing suspect overnight Saturday. Multiple crime scenes and hours of evasion later, the gunman was killed Sunday in a shootout with police. And so you need to know that this happened over a long span of time. It was like half a day, effectively, that this was playing out over many miles, a lot of distance. And one of the things that made it difficult, Francesca, for the response initially is that for at least a few hours on Sunday morning, the suspect was disguising himself as a police officer. He had a uniform and he had something that looked like a police car. And so it does appear that this was planned. We don't know much about the motive. They're saying that he appeared to have relationships with at least some of the people that were victims of the shooting, but not necessarily all. And so we don't know the motives yet. We do know the person. He was killed. I'm not interested in giving him any publicity in terms of his name or face, but that's basically what we know so far.
And I'm guessing he wasn't Muslim or of Middle Eastern descent
It
because
is
it
my
would have
belief that
been
he is
called
not.
terrorism at this point. Trump would
Yeah.
have definitely tweeted about it in those terms at this point. I mean, it's incredibly scary. It's awful. Like, especially when you hear about these planned attacks that are like that take place over, half a day, that are super thought through. I mean, I feel like the Mandalay Bay, Vegas shooting was like that as well. And also I'm reminded of the shootings in Norway and the ways that these places that are generally pretty sleepy, beautiful, like, oh my God, you're in Nova Scotia, enjoy it. It's gorgeous there if you can be outside. And then you have a mass murderer on the rampage. It's like there's something that like doesn't sit well in any case, but it's like very, very haunting to know that someone goes to that length to plan it.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, look, no matter what is going on in the world, if a person is planning to do this, it is difficult for rational people to imagine doing something like that, to be driven by so much, either just being deranged or so hate, so filled with hate that you'd be willing to do this. And I know that this is a stupid thing, I guess, to say, but this is the damage report, so I'm going to say it anyway. It seems weirder in a pandemic, honestly, like that you're surrounded by so much death, that so many people are dying literally every day, and you think, no, I'm not gonna contribute to more of it, actually. I mean, I guess, look, the world continues even under lockdown, including the worst parts of it. Twitter is evidence of that literally every day. But the idea that you would, like, we're 2 months or a month and a half into a lockdown, and this person thinks, yeah, I'm gonna go out shooting. I'm gonna take some people down and add, even more pain to one of the worst things that's happened in our life in the world.
And actually, interestingly, I've been thinking about the fact that the, shelter in place orders that hopefully are being abided by in many states are going to, we're going to see a decrease in the amount of gun violence. So this obviously is in Canada. This is, an outlier, but like, I think we have seen a decrease in the amount of mass shootings because people are not congregating in large groups anywhere, right? Like, it is a horribly morbid, like, silver lining to this entire situation. But yeah, man, why not just sneeze on these people? Come on.
Jeez. We are apparently seeing a decrease in mass shootings. I mean, many people saw that March was like the first March in America in a very long time that we didn't have a school shooting because kids weren't actually in schools. Now, in some places, we are not seeing a decrease in gun violence, but it is a different sort of gun violence. And of course, as you know, people are scared and paranoid, and many people have lost their jobs and they're not getting the help that they need. Those are the sorts of things that could give rise to more individualized gun violence rather than sort of planned school shootings, those sorts of things. And so the violence might continue in a different form. I don't know overall how the numbers will change over time. Hopefully, there will be a reduction. That would be
I mean,
nice.
that's an interesting question too. It's like I don't know. I believe that, are gun stores deemed essential, right? I know I've seen lines, but this was a few weeks ago outside of
Yes.
gun stores, right? Like there were many, many people, and especially Asian Americans who were arming themselves, I believe, defensively, right? Because of the amount of anti-Asian racism and violence and just, the president stoking that as well.
Yeah.
But that's an interesting question. Is like, all right, what do are we in this country, in the US at least, like somehow it's deemed essential to go and be able to buy your
Yeah.
AR-15?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly what to make of that, of those lines. I did find that very frustrating too when I saw that. Part of me wonders to what extent it's people who already own guns want to own more, and like with any big purchase that you don't technically need, but you kind of want to have, you'll take an opportunity to convince yourself that you need to do it now. I don't know. Like I have dress shoes, but when I got married, I bought new ones. Because you need to have
Wow.
new dress shoes for your wedding. So I think there might be some of that. But then also, the idea that there's some people who are like, oh, maybe this is the opportunity that I'm finally going to get to shoot another person, something that's been lurking in the back of my mind. Now it might become necessary. Wouldn't that be the worst thing imaginable that someone might break into my house and I might have to shoot them? Hopefully, that's a small percentage of the American public, but we know that it's a part. I also want to say just, on Canada in particular. So 18 people died. One apparently was a police officer. I believe it's Constable Heidi Stevenson, who had been on the force for 23 years. One other officer was wounded. I am reading that one of the reasons that mass shootings like this are so rare in Canada is in part because after 1989 shooting that left 14 people dead, they enacted new gun laws, similar to Australia. These countries, very reasonable countries, saw horrible violence and thought, let's do what's necessary to not have that some more. And although it hasn't stopped all shootings from happening, we haven't seen the sorts of mass shootings generally that we do in America when we say, you know, we value the ability to own, you know, 30 ARs more than we do, you know, the value of people's life.
Yeah. And I think you may raise a good point about the way that quarantine is affecting people's lives and actually making their situations perhaps more violent. I mean, we know that a lot of mass shooters have turned out to have histories of domestic violence. And right now, when everyone is staying at home, and I know there is a lot of alcohol consumption, there is a huge concern that domestic violence is increasing. So while we might see fewer mass shootings, this case excluded, you know, there perhaps will be, and I think there is more domestic violence because people are staying at home, they're scared, they're locked in with their families, they realize their kids are kind of crappy, whatever. The point is that then, you know, it's important for law enforcement to actually follow up and follow the signs when family members call them to say and to warn them about their loved one or their family member who's being abusive to them, right?
Yeah.
We know that actually if those things had been stopped, that if domestic violence had been stopped, that then you can, you know, preemptively prevent something like a mass shooting. And I'm not saying that was the case with this guy. I'm just saying these are patterns that we have seen, not thankfully, but because we live in one of the most dangerous countries when it comes to gun violence.
Yeah, 100%. So we're going to continue to watch to see. Hopefully that will be the entirety of those who are victims of this horrible act of violence. It is possible, as I laid out, that others have as well.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Over the weekend, Trump continued to have his coronavirus press conferences, which are ostensibly to update America about the response of the government. They don't tend to do that. What they tend to do is produce moments like this, where a reporter, I believe for CBS News, asked him tough questions about what he knew and when he knew it, considering what he was telling his fans to do, come to his rallies and all of that, and he did not respond well to her tough line of questioning.
Same thing about you, that you should have warned them the virus was spreading like wildfire through the month of February instead of holding rallies with thousands of people. Why did you wait so long
to warn them? Who are you with?
And why did you not have social distancing until March 16th?
Who are you with?
I'm Weijia Jiang with CBS News.
So if you look at what I did in terms of cutting off or banning China from coming in.
Chinese nationals. But by the way, not Americans who are also
coming from China. Nice and easy. Just relax. We cut it off. People were amazed. These gentlemen, everybody was amazed that I did it. We had 21 people in a room. Everybody was against it but me. Dr. Fauci said, had I not done that, perhaps tens of thousands, and maybe much more than that, people would have died. I was very early, very, very early. And we just saw, you saw Bret Baier making a statement. They had a debate well into February. And not even mentioned. It wasn't even mentioned, the Democrats. We were very early. Oh, I'm the president. And you know what I just did?
So quickly.
And you know what I just...
And by the way, when you issued the ban, the virus was already here.
Okay, and you know how many people, when I issued the ban, how many cases of virus were in the United States when I issued the ban? Do you know the number?
There was...
No, no, how many cases... Remember I said one person. How many cases were here when I issued the ban?
But tell did me. You know?
No. You have to do your research. How many?
I did my research. On the 23rd of March, you said you knew this was going to be a pandemic.
Can I tell you what?
Well,
I did know it. I did know it. All I have to do is look.
So you knew it.
All, anybody knew it. Just, are you ready? How many cases were in the United States when I did my ban? How many people had died in the United States?
So do you acknowledge that you didn't think
keep your voice down, please. Keep your voice down.
Did you not?
How many cases were in the United States? I did a ban where I'm closing up the entire country. How many people died?
And that's a fair point.
How many people died in the United States? And yet I closed up the country, and I believe there were no deaths, zero deaths, at the time I closed up the country. Nobody was there. And you should say thank you very much for good judgment.
You should say thank you very much for good judgment after he repeatedly, like, I hate using the word petulant or childlike, like a five-year-old. Continue to say, nice and easy, just relax. You should say thanks. Keep your voice down, he says to this. He can't, for it's a reporter, she's female, she's not white. Those three things, he can't take it. The second he saw her sitting there, it was under his skin already.
Yeah, and Trump is also foiled by one other thing, which is that she's good looking. And so he, like, in his brain, there's a short circuit happening where he doesn't know. He's like, all right, do we go xenophobia? But she's got eyes. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard for him. But yeah, I was waiting for him to like go like steady girl, you know, and talk to her like she's a horse, you know, like, and also I, you know, you have to hand it to this reporter, just the amount of bravery that it takes to not only ask him a tough question, but interrupt him and go harder again. And then sort of sit there as he tells you to keep your voice down, which I would have gotten up and thrown a note. I would gone straight up Zaidi and thrown a shoe at him, you know, 2006 or whatever. Shout out to the people who remember that.
I do.
Yeah. But like, you know, that it takes, again, you're saying as a woman of color, sitting there as a reporter, as any reporter, just confronting Trump, that takes a whole lot of bravery.
Yeah. Yeah. She did great. So yeah, as you pointed out, like the she's attractive. But he hates her, and he hates her even more because she's attractive. I mean, he effective, like, there are a number of people who have an incel mentality that occasionally still have sex, but still look at the world like an incel. They hate and fear and are suspicious of women because they know deep down that they are so awful that no woman could actually legitimately be interested in them. And so he's had to trick women or try to impress them throughout his entire life. And so he sees a woman like that and thinks, I wish I could be with that person, but she's being mean to her, and so I'm going to be childish and rude and petulant and all those words.
Yeah.
The issue, too, though, is that there were a lot of issues with what he said. So he, at one point, said if he hadn't shut down travel from China, which, again, I'm glad she pointed out, was not everyone. It was Chinese nationals. And when he did it, the virus was already here. There's a lot of issues here. That tens of thousands would have died. Well, I got a news update for you, Trump. Tens of thousands have died. Four tens of thousands actually have died. So that didn't work. The idea that he would keep bragging about it, I say almost every show, he kept saying over and over, how many people had died when I shut down? Zero had died. Zero. Okay, well, 40,000 have died now. So it looks like that was not adequate, that was not enough to stop literally almost a Vietnam of Americans dying. So maybe stop bragging about the thing that has failed worse than perhaps any government action in a living memory.
Yeah. And what she said was super important. You pointed it out, but let's just double down on it. I mean, she should have even stuck to this point, is that banning Chinese nationals does nothing. Like, that is literally just xenophobia. You're just like, well, if you don't have a U.S. passport, or if you're not an American, right, if you're not a citizen or whatever, have a visa, then you don't get to come back. It's like, that doesn't, it's a colorblind coronavirus, all right? It doesn't care. You're the one who's idiotic enough to just apply the travel ban to Chinese nationals. 40,000 people should not be let into the country. And I don't agree with making it, you know, I think Biden put out an ad that was like a little bit borderline xenophobic about, you know, Trump wasn't tough enough to China. No, no, no. This isn't about whether we like China or not. This is about, yeah, if you're going to have a travel ban, that means everybody, no matter where you're from, no matter what you look like, no matter what, passport or visa you hold.
Yeah. Yeah. And a few other issues with what he said. You can so easily trick him, either specifically or just by the nature of what's going on, into backing himself into a position that makes no sense. So he clearly didn't think that coronavirus was serious. He might still not think it's serious, but he definitely didn't think it for literally months, January, February, and March. He wasn't willing to do anything to stop its spread. He didn't think that it would be a big issue. That is obvious. But he can't say that now because it looks bad. And so he has to say things like what he said a few weeks ago, which was, I always knew it was going to be a pandemic. I knew before anyone that it would be a pandemic. Okay, so he says that because he thinks it makes him look smart rather than stupid, which is what reality makes him look like. But then, as she pointed out, okay, if that's the case, why were you packing stadiums full of your fans? You're saying you knew it was going to be a pandemic, you knew it was going to spread, but you didn't warn them. In fact, you encouraged them to come together into a big group. Well, was the goal to kill your own followers? Why would you do that if, as you say, you knew it was going to be a pandemic? The honest answer is that he didn't think it was going to be a pandemic. So he was being a little bit less irresponsible, specifically with his own fans' lives, just irresponsible with all of our lives.
Yeah.
If you went to one of those rallies, I know that you're inoculated against reason, but he was willing to let you die. That's what he's telling you. He knew you could get sick. He knew you could die, but he wasn't willing to call off his stupid little rally.
No, and in a way, they know that too, right? They know they are sacrificial lambs only for Trump, that they are tools and they don't mind being tools. And this is what a neo-fascist authoritarian mentality breeds. At those rallies, he explicitly said, coronavirus is the new Democratic hoax. That's exactly what he told all of those thousands of people gathered to see him. So you not only didn't take it seriously and encourage this rally, but you then said it was a straight up made up hoax. And we are now still seeing the impact of that lie.
Yeah. Well, and let's go one step further. So as you pointed out, he said it at that rally. So he said it was a hoax. And they always respond, hey. He wasn't saying that the whole disease was a hoax. He was saying that the media's coverage of it, because remember, even though he now says the media was downplaying it, at that point, they were saying the media was overplaying it, implying that it could be something, what, really dangerous that would kill tens of thousands of Americans? He was just pointing out that that was a hoax. But wait, he also, at that point, wants you to believe that he already knew it would be a pandemic and it would kill all of these people. So none of this makes any sense whatsoever.
John, it's a 7D hoax, okay?
You got to move the piece down to there and then that swings around and then there. It's a Rubik's Cube of hoax. No, the hoax is that he cared and knew. He's incompetent and ignorant. That is the answer to literally everything. It's the simplest answer. It's also the most accurate. Occam's razor, but for Trump. Trumpum's razor. That's what I'm going to call it. It would seem to be difficult, in terms of Trump's re-election chances, that he is presiding over 15 to 2,000 Americans dying literally every day from a disease that we saw coming for months. But he has a strategy. It is going to be, don't talk about the people who are sick, don't talk about the people who have died, just make up numbers about those that you've saved. And so, a couple weeks ago, Parker Malloy, who's a friend of the show, she had tweeted a couple of Trump tweet comments about the effect of his travel restrictions from China and how many lives he credited that with saving. So on March 5th, he said it saved a lot of lives. On the 17th, he said it saved a tremendous number of lives. On the 24th, he said tens of thousands would be dead right now if I didn't. Then on the 7th of this month, he said if I didn't do that, we would have hundreds of thousands more people dying. Well, that number now can be updated once again, Francesca, because he had this to say over the weekend.
60,000 or so, that's a lot of people, but that's 100,000 was the minimum we thought that we could get to, and we will be lower than that number, anywhere from 100 to 220,000 people. But I really believe it could have been billions of people had we not done what we did. We made a lot of good decisions, but one of those things. Go ahead.
Yeah, 60, so you heard correctly. He said he saved billions of, not millions, billions of lives. And I did a fact check because I thought, wait, aren't there only billions of people? Yeah, there are 8 yeah. million people in the world, it turns out. He saved most of them, a good chunk of them, by doing something that did not stop over 700,000 people as of this moment having coronavirus in America.
Yeah, I mean, this is the point where, like, you need to be in that press corps being like, sir, there are only 8 billion people in the world. Are you saying you saved the majority of them, half of them? Like, I would just lead him on, be like, so half? So, like, 4.5 billion? Okay, great. And, like, he would totally go there with you. And then it would just be a great memeable moment from this hellscape that we're living in. Trump unironically will say at some point, and I am sure he has said in cabinet meetings, we've got a gajillion masks. Like, Mr. President, that's not a number. Like, he unironically says gajillion.
maybe. I do think, though, I think he escalated too fast, because where does he go from here? Like, does he, in a month, is he going to claim that he saved 1 trillion lives?
Yeah.
Okay, probably not, right? But are you 100% sure he won't? I don't know. He literally said billions there. And yeah, I mean, look, I watch every day, and we're at 765,613 cases. That's of this morning. It's certainly higher now. Over 40,000. And that is, like, again, it's like that old quote about, you know, one death is a tragedy, you know, a million deaths are a statistic. It just, it's in, like, 40,000 people. Like I keep saying, that's almost Vietnam. We're going to, in 2 weeks, we're going to have passed the death toll from Vietnam. Remember that national tragedy that, like, for a half century we've been affected by? That's happened in the past month. And it happened not because of a totally needless protracted war, but a totally needless surrender in the face of this disease. And he is still every day fighting, doing what is necessary to stop it, as we're going to get to in terms of testing. But anyway, in terms of his attempt to control the narrative, he hates that number, the 40,000 that have died. Not that they have died, but that it is cited as a number, and especially that it's commonly cited as the most who have died. And so, in addition to saying he just keeps making up every day how many he saved with his cutting down of Chinese national travel to America, he also has this.
States is number one, but we're not number one. China's number one, just so you understand. China's number one by a lot. It's not even close. They're way ahead of us in terms of death. It's not even close. You know it. I know it. They know it. But you don't want to report it. Why? You'll have to explain that. Someday I'll explain it.
At the end there, it's just that he doesn't know what he's saying. He doesn't even know. So they're gonna, why are they going to explain why they're lying to people? No, so someday you're going to explain it, but aren't you just explaining it right now? Why wouldn't you explain it? Anyway, so we have 40,000 dead, but China has more. And look, they might. I don't trust their government whatsoever. But he is more interested in the branding of them being number one than actually keeping those numbers down. I wish he was as worried about us hitting 50,000 or 60,000 as he is that it looks bad for him right now.
Yeah. No, I love that quote because I think it'll just come in handy in the future. We can always point to China's number one. China's number one. You know, he said it. It's true. High-speed rail. You know, mm-hmm. like advances in solar and wind, also carbon emissions and, like, you know, clamp down on free speech and all that. But I mean, yeah, I think what's so hard to watch about this moment, and especially the way that not just Trump, but a lot of right wingers, you know, in the media, on radio, the way that they're spinning it is that this, you know, you're not wrong to say that this is on par with, you know, Vietnam casualties. The problem is that then there was the enemy of communism and, you know, also crazy, you know, anti-Vietnamese, anti-Asian racism again, right? There was somehow this thing to fight. There was an ideology to fight. Mm-hmm. There is no ideology to fight. This is just science. And so at a moment when anyone in their right mind, even another Republican, as disgusting as that might, you know, be, anyone else would just say, this is a moment to come together. This is a moment to actually look good. This is a moment to look presidential. But mostly this is a moment where we can't make anyone the enemy. We can't blame and scapegoat. This is actually a moment where we have to pull together as a nation.
Yeah.
Right? Like, then, and it's like, but yeah, but what's the point of war then? If we can't, you know, call someone a new racial slur that I made up, like, why do we go to war? Like, literally, that's the stuff that's in his head. And that's what I think a lot of right wingers do. It's like, well, man, if we can't demonize an entire religion or people, then what's the point of waging this war anyway?
So I think I agree and disagree. I do agree that there's no easy ideology to blame for the cause of death. There is, hypothetically, though, an ideology to blame for the fact that it has gotten as far in America as it has.
For sure.
And it rules everything in our country. Yeah, the number could be, like I've said from literally day one, before there was a death in America, there were always going to be deaths from coronavirus in America. The only question was going to be how many and what we were going to do to keep that number low. And in the end, it turns out we're going to do very little to keep that number low. One additional thing, though, I just bring this up because it has been just stewing inside of me that the story I'm going to reference isn't news. So here's one thing, just a throwaway comment that he made at the press conference that, again, it isn't making any news. But here is what he had to say.
And, you know, the other thing, had we not done what we did in terms of closing, because there is that concept of let's let it ride.
So, do you know what he's saying there?
So let's let it ride.
Yeah, no, there isn't a concept of let's let it ride. What he is referencing there is his let it wash over us thing. There's a concept in his brain, which is the only place that reality exists from his point of view. So we close things down. There's this other concept, which is just let it ride over America, that only he wanted to do, that he had to be repeatedly talked out of doing. The first time he was told that would kill millions of people, it didn't stick. He still had to be repeatedly told, no, you cannot just let millions of people die to stimulate herd immunity or something like that. And it still bothers him that he was stopped, so he makes references like that. But that idea that he had to have multiple, and there's multiple administration officials confirming that they had these conversations with him, it made a blip in the news that he wanted to kill millions of Americans, and nobody even talks about it anymore. How is that possible?
The people who are talking about that, John, though, are his followers, and they still believe that. And we're going to look at that this week on Newsbroke. But basically, I think it goes deeper than just, you know, allowing something to kill millions of people, because it's which millions of people are going to die. And we know the people who have been on the front lines and who have been the hardest hit in this country from the coronavirus. And hey, they don't look like your average Trump supporter.
The protests against lockdowns have continued in multiple states. They're very well funded. You know, these organizations that funded Tea Party protests and things like that, billionaires are flooding money into these to get people to fight back against governors that are shutting down states. Because even though if those states were to reopen as of now, many of those protesters could end up dying. The people who are funding the protests, their stocks might in the short term do better. It's an open question whether they would actually do better in the long run, but they seem to think that in the short term it would. And that is why those protests are getting so much backing from places like Fox News, which is doing long segments, not just advertising and like glorifying the protests, but telling you exactly where you can go and when if you want to take part in these protests. So they're doing advertising for them. And what do you think about the willingness of so many Republicans or Trump cultists, whatever, to dispense with the masks and the social distancing and just crowd into lawns and, you know, yell about, you know, liberate, like watering the tree of liberty?
I mean, I don't know. It's hard. It's a hard question. Like, we are, like, how many years into Trumpism as this ideology that obviously, like, again, grew off of the Republican Party, right? It's always been there, but this is a very mask off, you know, like, you know, again, extra moldy spore. I like to think of Trumpism as like the mushroom that grew off of like Paul Ryan's back brush. Very disgusting, but that's exactly what happened. And I, again, like, somehow, because we are progressive and because we're on the left and because we believe in things like, you know, humanity and dignity and equality, et cetera, I have to humanize people. And in some ways, I don't really hold them personally responsible. Yes, obviously, these people individually might be racist, they might be homophobic, they might be sexist, whatever they are. But, like, they've been told and fed from people like Trump and from Fox News, like you pointed out, these lies about the number of deaths, the lies about how serious coronavirus is, the lies about constantly comparing the numbers to other numbers that have nothing to do with what we're currently going through. So in some ways, you can't blame them because, again, this is the lowest common denominator. This is the lowest information voter.
Yeah, and it has become just so normalized to lie to these people. Like, we're not going to do a big thing. I thought about doing a thing on Jenny Pirro, her show over the weekend. But she just said, enough of the inflated numbers. Not, you know, I worry that the numbers are being inflated or here's a reason I believe it. She just says the numbers are inflated. And that wasn't even the point of her segment. That's just a thing that she throws into it before making her point. And so it has become, in the span of 2.5 weeks, 100% normalized. The numbers are made up, so you don't have to trust them. So if you're one of the people who has unfortunately put your trust in people like Jeanine Pirro, of course you're gonna believe that. And you're going to act based on it. Apparently this thing isn't as deadly as everyone is saying. That's what Jeanine Pirro, you know, doctor, says. The reason I still want to blame them a little bit is, like, people like Sean Hannity, Jeanine Pirro, Tucker Carlson, they give off, for me, every indication that this is a person that you can't trust. The obvious demonstrable hypocrisy from issue to issue, like, you would hope that more people would have the critical thinking necessary to see through it. But I get it. People are busy. It's just sad to see the Trump thing go from something that we occasionally sort of, like, almost jokingly refer to as a death cult to a literal death cult, where it is, to demonstrate my loyalty to my leader, I am willing to die, while advocating for something that will lead to many dying.
Yeah, I mean, like I tweeted recently, this is like all sci-fi, you know, novelists and screenwriters need to be immediately fired because nobody thought this up. Like, a president in the middle of a pandemic encouraging his supporters in an election year to go out and spread the virus and their hateful ideology at the same time, thereby continuing this pandemic and supporting his re-election. I mean, that is like the most invasion of the body snatchers type level of what we're living. I think that it goes deeper than that for me, though, because another thing that is so sad about this, you know, buckethead ideology that Republicans have is that it's preventing them from seeing what the solution to this issue really is, which is not just having a better public health system, not just having, let's say, Medicare for all, but also having a social safety net to the point where they are not having to, scrimp and save to literally either face not eating or having to go back to work. And a lot of them are legitimately concerned about their economic well-being, but so are we all. And if there were a more of a social safety net, if there was a better stimulus package, if people could, you know, like in other countries, be put on federal payroll for this time being and then be guaranteed their jobs back, I mean, we wouldn't be having this discussion. Yeah. But Republicans won't go there. They'd rather go towards xenophobia, spread the disease, it's all a hoax, than give anyone any more economic assistance.
Yeah, and this is one way where, so there, some of them are just saying, I want to be out and about, I want to go get my nails done or something like that. They want the freedom of movement. But a lot of them are saying, my business is going to be shut down, my job's not going to come back, economic worries. So their solution is, let's ignore the virus and just let everyone go back to their business. Millions will die, whatever.
Sure, but they're all workers.
Exactly. No, so there needs to be an alternative. And so, look, the House has passed some bills that will never become law that are good. But hypothetically, if you were to pass such an appealing alternative to just let everyone die, along the lines of what you were saying, maybe they're immune to it. Maybe they wouldn't trust it because it's Pelosi or whatever. But provide an alternative that is as appealing as possible when put up against just let everyone die. That would be my choice. And in terms of the sci-fi thing that you were saying, it's like if there was a zombie apocalypse and there was a group of protesters that would like provide body shields for the zombies when the military was trying to shoot them. Or like the like there was a rocket that was being prepped to blow up an asteroid before it hits us, and they sabotaged it because God sent the asteroid. That's what it feels like. It's like people are rooting for it.
We should create.
Let's make that.
We should create all the different like end of the world movies. But like if it actually had happened, like in the U.S., you're absolutely right. Like crazy Christian fundamentalists would like kill Bruce Willis before he had time to sacrifice himself. You know.
Somebody pushes him off the asteroid and then yells, MAGA! That's what would happen. So there you had a nurse who's probably been working 19 hours a day for the past few weeks to save people's lives, being face down by a protester who's like, no, just like let everything open up. And if that leads to far more people needing the help of heroes like you, that's a cost I'm willing to have other people pay.
I have no words. I mean, once again, the amount of heroism and bravery from nurses, and especially that nurse in particular, being able to stand down some idiot in their Dodge Ram or whatever that was, just like honking at them, who's got a dumb, dumb sign that says land of the free, but you can't really see of the, so it just looks like land free.
Yeah.
I mean, like, again, I've been in those situations where you're like, you're at a protest, you're short, your adrenaline is going, and you're being targeted, and I can only imagine this guy is being targeted not only, I don't know why. I think I heard something, go back to China in there.
Let me ask you a question. So I didn't see the other angle. I've heard that nurse is Asian, but I'm not sure. Do we know that? Was it was it just a political sort of weird thing for that protester to say, or was it a racist insult to go back to China? For this person.
I don't know specifically. What I can tell you is that nurse was very attractive.
We can confirm that.
And listen, there were no masks on his forearms. And listen, that
because
could be
they couldn't
hazard,
fit
because
they around
they wouldn't
it.
Fit around them. But yeah, I mean, like this is where we're at. We're celebrating racism. We're celebrating ignorance. Like if again. We can do better than this. If you think that in November we don't have a chance to do better, you're out of your goddamn mind. I'm sorry. We need to take this seriously. Those people need to crawl back into the holes from whence they came, right? Like, no more of this. We've seen it far too much. There's way too much glorification of people, white people, saying whatever the hell they want to people of color. That is not okay. You bet your ass, like if we were not quarantined right now and it's springtime, how many new videos of white people yelling at black people mm-hmm. about where they can and cannot go? That is Trumpism. This is the new country we are living in. Just because you're not seeing it or feeling it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. We got to send the zombie apocalypse home. These are people saving our lives. The least we can do is, I think, defend them. And at this point, what I'm saying is defend them with our vote.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, more than 1,500 people died just yesterday. Nabila Islam, who's running for Congress right now, she sent out a meme that had an image of a cop like brutalizing an African-American individual with the argument, just obey authority. People being caged because they try to get into America, not following the rules, just obey authority. And these conservatives now stay at home so that I don't kill a bunch of senior citizens with my asymptomatic spread of coronavirus. No, that affects me. I don't believe in obeying authority anymore. Now it's all about the snake and don't tread on me and all of that stuff. These social movements, man, if you're just kneeling, you are a thought criminal and potentially a traitor.
Yep.
If you are crowding the streets in defiance of social distancing and all of this, then you are a patriot. That's what it is. If you're spreading death, you're the best sort of person. If you are peacefully, indeed silently protesting, you are the worst sort of person. Representative AOC is, as I just said, a representative, but could she perhaps be a senator soon? She didn't rule it out a few days ago.
Have you thought much about a primary challenge to Chuck Schumer? And you're that's in the back of your mind a little bit.
It's in, and it's in the front of a lot of other people's minds. So I'm curious if you've done that.
No. Right now, you know, my concern is just making sure that I'm taking care of everything that's right in front of me and just, you know, making sure that I earn the honor and the privilege of serving New York 14's congressional district for another term. I mean, you know, as you mentioned, while I am honored that, that, you know, that there are well-heeled and well-funded, you know, organizations like the U.S. Chamber of Congress kind of coming in opposition, I also don't underestimate the millions of dollars invested interest in unseating me. And so I'm very much focused on my election in 2020. And honestly, this news cycle is so insane. Who knows where any of us are going to be in 2022?
Who knows? Which is not a no. It's who knows.
Did she say in 2022?
In 2022, who knows where we'll be? Yes.
Yeah.
So she's not doing it now, and she doesn't say, "Yeah, I'm thinking about it," which nobody would. She didn't say it's not going to happen. I'm not going to do it. She said, "I have to focus on this. I've got a lot of responsibilities, obviously, but who knows where we'll be?" What do you think?
Well, listen, the laugh doesn't lie. The sort of like the blush laugh. Well,
there was
a laugh, and that sort of indicates, like, you know, she's flattered that people are thinking about that, and she hasn't ruled it out. She is thinking about it herself. I don't know if it's the smartest move. Mm. Just on a, like, just strategically, as much as I think that she could definitely take him and she could probably mount a very good campaign against him. It's a questionable. I mean, Schumer and Pelosi, as critical as I am of them, and as a lot of progressive Democrats are, they are arguably, they're seen as the only leadership, whereas Joe Crowley, people didn't know that name. He wasn't a household name, right?
Yeah, that's true. He wasn't. Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
First of all, I agree, and about them being the only, like, seen as House leadership. Some people might informally think of Schiff as a leader, but I don't want those three to be the names that people think of when they think of national Democrats or Democrats in a position of leadership. I want them to think of people like Bernie Sanders and others, including potentially AOC. Yeah, if she were to run against him, I would be worried. It would be tough. He'd have $1 billion. He's been there for a long time. And hypothetically, if she weren't to win, then she hypothetically might be out of office. I mean, I guess she'd primary and maybe she could still run for her seat as a representative. I honestly, like, while that would be an upgrade, I want her to be thinking potentially larger than that in the, not the next 2 years, but maybe in the next 4 years. We'll see. But anyway, I do want to just quickly get to Chuck Schumer. What does he think about this?
I want to ask you one other question, sir. Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez this week did not rule out a possible 2022 primary run against you. Are you confident you could beat her?
Look, throughout my career, I've done my job. I'm totally focused on this COVID. We are the epicenter. And I found throughout my career, you do your job well, everything else works out okay.
Okay, so he's, as of right now at least, he's not worried. Would you be worried if you were him?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I think so. I think absolutely. I mean, after, especially in New York politics and seeing what she did to Joe Crowley, like, you gotta be worried. Mm-hmm. That's why I think it is important to mount. I think it is absolutely important to primary you know, Democrats, for sure. I disagree with saying you shouldn't do that. But, you know, you gotta spook them a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the fact that she came in and took down someone who was in leadership, if I was Schumer, that would scare me. I definitely think whether she has any interest in primarying him, whether maybe she's thinking potentially about a presidential run or something, you know what I would like? And maybe this is the first step of it. I would like her to make him worried every minute of every day that she's going to primary him, because if that leads to him making one decision between now and then that he wouldn't otherwise, or two or 10 that are more progressive because of his fear of her challenge, I think that that would be a great way at almost no cost for her to continue to improve America.
Absolutely. Yeah. That is exactly right.
Hope so. We'll see. Maybe keep an eye on her and a number of others. So this is not only the week of Earth Day, but a particularly important Earth Day. And for that reason, we at TYT have put together a special for our members where I have talked with any number of different environmental activists and authors, scientists, reporters, and really try to find out what all of these different groups think about the state of our environment and our climate today, particularly under these lockdown conditions, and the likelihood that anything good in that area is going to come over the next 6 months or a year, particularly considering how the Democratic primary has proceeded. So all of that will be available starting on Earth Day. But to give you a taste of the sort of conversations we're having, I'm very excited to welcome to the show our next guest, the founder, co-executive director, and art director of Zero Hour, Nadia Nazar. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Very glad to have you here. And I'm curious, you know, obviously your life has been changed drastically because of what's happened in terms of this quarantine, but the organization is also being affected. So how are you and the group adapting to these changing circumstances?
Yeah, I think it's been harder, like, personally with everything, because as an organization, we've always been organizing online through Zoom calls, through emails, through Slack. Like, that's been normal to us. So organizing online hasn't been that different, but our actions have had to be changed. We were organizing with other organizations in a coalition working to do this massive three-day action for this week physically in so many different cities all across the country for the 50th anniversary of Earth Day, but we can't do that anymore. So we're doing a live stream now with the coalition that we're a part of. So, and we're doing a digital campaign as well called Getting to the Roots. So we haven't been able to do like physical mobilizations or getting our ambassadors and volunteer base to go out to their communities and do our campaign. But we have been able to still engage communities online.
You know, I had been wondering that because we had Jamie Margolin on a few months ago, and she had been talking about that you were about to launch this nationwide tour. The timing was somewhat unfortunate. But I'm curious. Yeah. So as you said, you have experience, history of digital organization and communication. Are you finding that with so many other people, young people who are interested in the climate, also locked down, are many of them sort of taking this opportunity to get involved, perhaps digitally with organizations like yours?
I think that it's been a little hard because I think everyone's kind of going through like an emotional time. Like it is a hard time that we're going through, like seeing all the devastation happening and all the people that are suffering and dying because of COVID-19. And it's been like really weird for a lot of young people, especially a lot of seniors who won't be able to have like the graduation or like the prom and the different events that they expected. So I think it's been a little like emotionally daunting for a lot of people, but I think that people are starting to get into things now and spending more time educating themselves. We have webinars weekly now about different aspects of climate justice, and we've had good engagement with that, and a lot of young people and older people as well joining on to learn more about stuff like environmental racism, colonialism, patriarchy, and we're going to continue to keep doing those webinars.
And so I know, speaking personally, like I'm continuing to do my show, but as you alluded to, there's the personal effect of all this stuff that's going on and how it affects you. And activism can be both an inspiration to continue to stay engaged, or it can be also like another burden in some ways when you're already, you know, you're worried about your health, the health of people around you and all of that. How are you holding up so far after a couple months of this?
I've been doing okay. I'm a senior in high school, so it has been a little upsetting that I can't see my friends because we're all going to college next year. But as an artist, I've been trying to get into new things, trying to do more art and kind of keep myself busy with that, as well as organizing for Earth Day Live this week and getting more people to be engaged. And it is like really kind of hopeless in the climate movement right now. Not in the climate movement, but like I personally feel, I felt a little hopeless, especially after Bernie dropped out. So suspended his campaign. So I was, that was like a hard time for me. And I know for a lot of other people. And I think that we're trying to figure out right now, like what we can do to move forward, especially when we can physically mobilize, because I feel like there's going to be a lot of energy to get into the streets once we can actually go out of our houses.
Yeah, a lot of people would just be desperate to get into the streets under any condition or any circumstance. Yeah. You can provide them with a good reason to do it. So, I was obviously devastated when Bernie suspended. It looks like, barring some huge change, that Biden is going to be the nominee. And obviously, most organizations that have rated the environmental policies of those two candidates, Bernie laps him a couple times. So, I mean, scale of 1 to 10, how hopeless are you that Biden can be persuaded, influenced, that he might bring on somebody good to deal with this under his administration?
Maybe like a 2 or 3.
Okay, that's
that
honest.
Great. Yeah.
That's honest.
Yeah, I definitely think that we should put pressure on him and try and get him to have more progressive policies, because he has endorsed the Green New Deal, but to get him to like actually carry out what the Green New Deal has, and to have, because he currently is looking for 100% renewable energy by 2050, I believe, but like that's too late, and we need to make sure that he's going to do that by 2030. And yeah, we only have 10 years left, and if he's in office, then that's 4 out of 10 years, and that's a huge amount of time.
Anyway, I don't want to be too much of a downer. We're already in hard circumstances, so I apologize for making you think about that. And I'm still sort of trying to figure out next steps in different areas, one of them being, you know, advocacy on the climate. And so, you know, I don't want to get ahead of anything. I know that you and the organization are still working on it, but if there are people like you who are at home, maybe young people that care a lot about the environment, what is there anything that you can think of that they can do during this time to at least push a little bit in the right direction?
Yeah, I would definitely say to definitely learn more about climate justice, because climate justice is so broad when you're not broad, but it's so complex. And for me, whenever I think about the climate crisis, I think about how big it is and how intersectional it is, thinking about how it connects with the current pandemic, how it connects to different systems of oppression that are causing other certain communities like Black, Indigenous, and people of color to suffer more than their white counterparts. And I think it'd be really great if more young people learned more about the complexities of that and how daunting this crisis really is. Because I always feel like there's the people that really know a lot about climate justice in the youth movement, and then there are people that don't take the time to like educate themselves about it. And I see a lot of my classmates and my peers only talking about plastic when there's so much that we need to be talking about, and really having conversations with your family, your friends about it, getting that conversation to be started, and understanding that like we all are frustrated. We share that same frustration, that energy, and we really can do something about it, but we just really need more people to understand and join us in our movement.
Really fast. Other than Bernie Sanders, is there an elected official that, based on the way that they both talk about and, you know, try to legislate around climate, that reassures you that they understand that, the interconnected nature, that they are well educated on all facets of this?
Yeah, I would definitely say like Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Representative Ilhan Omar, definitely like most of the freshman caucus is really great, and a lot of the progressive elected officials that are in office understand. But at the same time, tackling this issue, we need to tackle it through electoral politics, but we also need to tackle it outside of electoral politics and make sure that we're creating cultural change and getting that societal change within people.
Well, and hopefully during this time, organizations like yours can provide people a way to do that digitally. They can't go outside, but that doesn't mean that they can't be improving themselves and working to improve the world as well. So I want to thank you for taking time out to join us. Really do appreciate it, and also the work that you and Zero Hour do around this.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.